I just got to backtrack a little bit. So this lady's in hospice. She and her husband are desperate to get the crizotinib, but she gets randomized to chemo, even though she's in hospice. So she
So when she came to see me,
you took her off hospice.
She checked out of hospice.
So yeah. she checks out of hospice to go into the study, gets randomized to chemotherapy, and she goes through the chemotherapy just to get to the crizotinib, I guess, right?
Yes.
And then she gets the
crizotinib. Yes.
Unbelievable. And then what happened?
Yes. And then I will say without any doubt that the best day as a thoracic oncologist in my life is in May of 2012, I got a picture sent by text of this patient of mine by her husband, of this patient of mine on an ATV, and I'm sure people know what an ATV is, and she was riding this ATV up a hill. I cannot describe to this day what I felt watching that picture, because this lady in December of 2010 was in hospice, and I was now a year and a half, almost a year and a half later, seeing a picture of this patient, you know, not on oxygen, nothing, just on an ATV riding up all by herself. So she did well and unfortunately started developing tumor progression in the brain and was on sertraline for a period of time, didn't do very well on that, mainly toxicity-wise, this disease was stable. And then in 2014, she was enrolled on the expanded access protocol of alectinib. And she's now 5 years out on alectinib with almost a CR. The brain mets have never progressed since. Unfortunately, she has now suffered consequences of the spine radiation that she developed. I suspect it is related to the spine radiation because she has developed a stricture in her esophagus. And so she needed reinsertion of her feeding tube.
Wow.
Because she developed a couple of different aspiration pneumonias. And my worry was that this stricture was malignant, but it was biopsied and it was non-malignant. They tried to dilate her, but they were very worried because this was a fibrotic stricture and the GI doctors were just a little concerned that they may have a perforation or something like that. And so she's on a G-tube now on alectinib, and I've been seeing her every 3 months. This is definitely an unusual case, but there are three things that sort of continuously I think about. One is, if this patient had been diagnosed even 6 or 8 months before she was, I don't think she would have had a chance to go on Profile 1014 trial and had this outcome. And for that matter, it was only in 2007 the first report of ALK translocation was published in Science by the Japanese investigators. And so there have been a lot of events in her life that have sort of by chance helped her to live this long. And I can tell you, I don't think I'm a religious person, but I don't know, I've developed a lot of faith because of this particular patient. And I think that that helps me take care of these patients. But yeah, I don't like to discuss this case because of the good outcome. A lot of patients have good outcome, but just the sequence of events of, you know, being in hospice, being on oxygen and in a wheelchair, to come to a point. And I also feel that so many different people in the world helped her. I mean, if ALK was not identified by investigators in Japan, if crizotinib had not been developed, when the investigators in Boston had not developed an ALK test, so on and so forth. I mean, the number of people that have helped her live these 9 years, 10 years is just tremendous. So this is the reason I think I'm so glad that I did choose thoracic oncology when 20 years ago, the pulmonologist I worked with was kind of, in a very concerned way, wondering why I was going into thoracic oncology.
Can you imagine walking into your clinic and the entire waiting room is filled with people like her? I mean, that becomes oncology, but, you know, who knows? We'll see.
I will say one last thing is, what has it been interesting with her case and now some other cases who have received immunotherapy and target therapy is you have to convince other specialties. You have to advocate for your patient because the first impression by the other is, what are you doing? You know, this patient has stage 4 lung cancer. And so as an oncologist, you have to advocate for your patient, say, yes, the patient has stage 4 lung cancer, and yes, the cancer may kill her any time, but she's done well, and I think we should maybe look at her a little differently than what we would, you know, normally to a lung cancer patient.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to Dr. Gadjil, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special iJournal Club audio program on the management of squamous cell carcinoma of the lung.